Hi, thanks for joining us today for MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We all know the cost of living has risen this year, but I have a question for you. Do you know what your personal cost of living is? Just ahead, I'll explain how to calculate it and why that's important. Then we'll open the phones for your questions on any financial topic. Here's the number, 800-525-7000. You can go ahead and call right now, 800-525-7000. This is MoneyWise on American Family Radio, biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Every other week or so, we devote the opening segment of our Monday program to talking about the financial basics. Our framework for those discussions consists of the five things you can do with money. You can earn it, live on it, give it away, owe it to someone, or grow it for the future by saving and investing. Just about anything related to money will fall into one of those five categories: earn, live, give, owe, and grow. Today, we're focusing on using money to live on. That is, the money you need for your monthly expenses, plus a few other expenses that only come due from time to time. Now, because of inflation, I suspect your expenses are higher today than they were a year ago. We've all paid higher prices at the gas pump, in the grocery store, and in lots of other places. The federal government issues a report each month on the overall cost of living. And while that report is helpful in some ways, it doesn't tell you anything about you and your household. What you really need to know is your personal cost of living. That is, how much does it cost each month to put food on your table, keep a roof over your head, and pay other expenses. Knowing your personal cost of living can help you construct a realistic spending plan or budget. Now, when I say realistic, I mean one that matches the reality of your cost of living and still has some cushion built in for other important financial obligations. You don't need fancy software to calculate your cost of living. You can do this with pencil and paper. First, write down your monthly giving. For a Christian, giving should be a priority, so make that first on your list. Next, put down how much you're saving each month for general emergencies. So carve those two out up front, giving and savings. Now, start a separate column for your various living expenses. Begin by listing all your fixed expenses. That would typically include things such as your mortgage or rent payment, a car payment if you have one, and any bills or debts for which you pay the same amount each month. For bills with variable amounts each month, you'll need to calculate monthly averages. To do that, get the last 12 months' worth of those bills. For each account, calculate the total yearly cost, then divide by 12 to get a monthly average. Then list those monthly averages in the same column with the fixed expenses that you've already written down. You'll also need to figure out and write down your monthly average for transportation costs, including gas and, if applicable, subway or bus fares. Next, take into account things that only occur every so often, such as car repairs and household repairs. Look back over the past year and figure out a monthly average with those items too. For example, if you had a car repair this year that was $1,200, that works out to an average of $100 a month. Also, think about regular bills that come due only once or twice a year, such as property taxes and insurance payments. Calculate monthly averages for those too and add those averages to your list. And there's one more thing to include. You need to take account of your gift giving. Total up what you spend on gifts over a year, including Christmas, and divide it by 12 for a monthly average. Now, here's the easy part. Simply add up all your fixed expenses and the various monthly averages for variable expenses. The total is an estimate of your average cost of living. Now, because it's an average, the amount won't match your actual spending in any given month, but it'll give you a good ballpark idea of your monthly needs. Next, do one more thing. Take that monthly cost of living figure and add in the giving and savings amounts you listed earlier. If that total exceeds what you're bringing in, you know you need to cut expenses somewhere because your outgo is exceeding your income. With a new year just around the corner, this is a great time to go through this little exercise of figuring out your cost of living so that you can adjust your budget accordingly for 2023. Sure, doing the calculations will require a little effort, but what you learn about your personal cost of living will help you make the most of what you have in the year ahead. In a moment, we'll go to the phones for your questions about anything of a financial nature. Here again is our number, 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. Thanks for being with us today for MoneyWise on American Family Radio. We'll be right back.
For American Family Radio, I'm Charles Morris with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. Marathons. Most of us have never run 26.2 miles at once, and you know the story of the first man to do it. A Greek messenger sent with the news of victory from the Battle of Marathon to Athens, but he died. Not exactly a good advertisement for running this type of race. Thankfully, there's an even better race, the Christian life. Remember Hebrews 12? Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. And how do we keep running? By fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith, and our Savior will sustain us. Get Anchor Devotional in print monthly. Visit getanchor.com.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the MoneyWise program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
Washington Watch.
This is a crisis of our own making, and that hard-nosed determination to not admit it for political reasons is just really, truly disheartening.
Yeah, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but on this particular issue, the contrast between the policies of the two administrations could not be sharper. As I've mentioned here on the program many times, I was at the border a little over a year ago. It was like a ghost town.
Weekday afternoons at 4 Central and Saturday evenings at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from One Ascent Investments on the MoneyWise program. They manage a comprehensive suite of value-based investment strategies designed to help Christian investors live aligned with what they value most. One Ascent believes that if your values inspire the way you live, they should also inspire the way you invest. This can be a unique form of worship. More information is available at investments.oneascent.com. That web address is investments.oneascent.com.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
Great to have you with us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, your host. It's time to turn the corner and take your questions on anything financial. That's right, on a Monday morning. What are you thinking about, financially speaking? We'd love to hear from you. We have lines open. Our team is standing by. We'd love to get you on the air. 800-525-7000 is the number to call. Again, 800-525-7000 with your financial questions today. In addition to your questions today, we'll be taking a few emails. Bob Dahl, Chief Investment Officer at Crossmark Global Investments, will stop by to weigh in on the markets, expecting some more economic data out this week. The market is poised for that information coming out later this week, and we'll see what all that means for the markets and the economy as we look at that through the lens of your investments. Again, Bob Dahl coming up in the final segment of the broadcast today. All right, let's go to the phones. Again, 800-525-7000 is the number to call. We're going to begin today in Texas. Hi, Karen. Thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Rob.
Yes, I'm calling on behalf of my husband. He's 61, retired from the military, so we received that retirement pay. And the main question is when to take the Social Security for him. He's looking at it as far as sooner rather than later because of the life expectancy that his grandfather had, dying in the mid-60s, father dying in the early 70s of age. And he's, like I say, 61. I would call him like in really pretty good health right now. But that's his question, our question.
Yeah, makes sense. And it's one that a lot of folks have to think through. It really comes down to, in the first one you mentioned, we just don't know, life expectancy. And so, you know, once you reach age 65, your life expectancy as a man is north of 83 years old. But none of us know the day or the hour the Lord will call us home. And you've got to look at, you know, family history and so forth to consider that. Just to put some numbers to it, Karen, for instance, if he were to wait until full retirement age, either 66 or 67, to receive his benefits, the amount that he would have given up between 62 and that point, it'll take about 12 years, just shy of 12 years, to make that up. And so, you know, if you were to go 67 plus 12 years, call it 79. He would need to live until at least 79 to make up for, through that higher check every month, to make up for the amount that he had given up between 62 and full retirement age. And then from 79 until the Lord calls him home, he would have a higher check locked in, or the two of you would have a higher check locked in for the rest of your lives. So that's really the kind of number you need to look at in terms of life expectancy. The second factor is just how necessary is the income. So if there's a gap right now, or at 62, between what income is coming into the household through any work that's being done and his military retirement and what your need is every month, then you may say, listen, we're comfortable locking in this lower amount, which is probably going to be about 30% lower than what you would receive if he were to wait until full retirement age. We're comfortable locking this in because it solves for a gap that we have in the income that we need to cover our monthly expenses. And so we're going to go ahead and do that for that reason, plus just his family history of longevity. But if there was another way around that, you could, you know, he could work part-time, or you all could cut back, or, you know, use other resources to kind of fill in this gap, then every year you wait, that check would grow by about 8% a year, and that, you know, is a permanent increase that would be locked in at the time he took the check. So I think you all just need to kind of think and pray through that and look first at how significant is the need at 62, and is there another way to solve for the income that's necessary? And then two, perhaps this added information around this idea that, well, he would need to live at least 12 years beyond full retirement age to make up everything you'd given up, but then you all would enjoy that higher check of about 30% for the rest of your lives. Give me your thoughts on all that.
I don't think there's a need. We have been so blessed that the portfolio is really solid. Yeah. And I think we've been retired almost a year, 11 months, and we haven't dipped into it yet.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
I don't think there's going to be a need.
Okay. So for that reason, I mean, my counsel would be, let's try to wait, because, you know, you're not going to get a guaranteed 8% increase in anything else you're invested in. And that's essentially what you're getting on the Social Security. And so, you know, even if he just split the difference and said, well, I don't really feel comfortable waiting until full retirement age, but, you know, taking it at 62 and locking in a benefit check that's 30% lower, that's a pretty big, you know, reduction. So I would, especially if you don't need the money, I would encourage you to think about waiting.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that statement about the 8% per year might be the clicker for him.
Okay.
All right.
Makes a lot of sense. Thank you very much for calling. Yeah. We appreciate it very much. And if we can help further along the way, let us know. 800-525-7000 is the number to call. Again, 800-525-7000. Let's go next to Ohio. Bob, you'll be next on the program, sir. How can I help you?
Listen, I know maybe you can't answer this, but I'm going to answer it, ask you anyway. I hear all these things about Social Security, where over the years they've raided the Social Security funds. And why can't they make these people that raided this Social Security fund pay it back through their salary? Like, you know, you can get if you don't pay your bills, they can guarantee you. Why don't they guarantee these senators and congressmen that raided that fund, because they're cheating the people that paid it out, and it ain't their money to begin with?
Yeah. Well, now the Social Security Trust Fund, are you talking about dipping into that money?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, what is it you're hearing specifically?
Well, I get these letters from congressmen and senators. Send us $10, $15, $20, and we're going to get that money back to you. And, yeah. And it just goes on for years and years, and I don't know what they do with the money you send them. So I stopped sending money because I know it's just futile.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, they certainly borrow from the Social Security Trust Fund, and, you know, it's used for the ongoing operations of the government, and the same way money deposited in a bank is used to finance spending by consumers and businesses. Doesn't mean it's a good idea. The other kind of thing we have hanging out there right now, Bob, that we've got to be aware of is that, you know, they're saying at 2035, the trust fund will be depleted, which means at that point, just through current revenues, through FICA taxes, we'd only be able to cover about 70% of benefits. Now, what's going to happen between now and then? Well, I think you're going to see two things. One is, I think you're going to see the full retirement age continue to be pushed out further. I think you're also going to see higher FICA taxes to accommodate this shortfall. We've got some real headwinds, I think facing us right now, not the least of which is the fact that our U.S. national debt is 125% of GDP. So policy matters, and that's why we need to show up and vote. But you're right. I mean, this certainly is going on with regard to the Social Security Trust Fund. Thanks for being a part of the program. I've got to hit a break, but back with more after this.
AFR programming is now available on Alexa.
You're joking, right?
Nope, not joking.
Seriously?
Yep, this is not a drill.
Wait a minute, no way.
There's a way, the Alexa way. So if you just happen to miss your favorite shows, no worries. You can now listen to each podcast with Alexa. It's simple and it's free. Just visit afr.net/apps and click Alexa. We're not joking.
We are grateful for support from LitePoint Portfolios, which seeks out family and faith-friendly investments for 401k and 403b plans, integrating faith values and fiduciary duty. LitePoint Portfolios offers retirement plans for a variety of organizations, such as businesses, nonprofits, and churches. And we're grateful for their sponsorship of the MoneyWise program. More information is available at LitePointPortfolios.com.
By now, you know that Sandy Rios has stepped away from the morning show. But don't despair. Sandy is shifting her talents to podcasting. She'll still be a part of AFR. And now, she won't need to wake up hours before the sun to keep us informed and encouraged every day. On the podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, you can enjoy the knowledge, insight, and interviews you've always loved on Sandy's morning show. Sandy Rios 24/7, beginning the week of January 9th on AFR.net.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the MoneyWise program. For more than 30 years, they've been helping Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors at every stage, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. Through scriptural principles and practical suggestions, SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information, including the short video webinar on profit and peace of mind, no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
Well, we'd always wanted to leave some of our money for God. but we didn't know where or how.
Bernie and Alice Larson are faithful supporters of the American Family Association.
We felt like this was put into our laps as answer to our prayers as to what we could do after we're gone.
You can learn more about charitable annuities and other financial products at afafoundation.net or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Hey, Greg, I need some advice.
Oh, what's up?
I'm really struggling with finding ways to cut back. With costs going up, especially in healthcare, what do you guys do?
We use CHM, Christian Healthcare Ministries. It's a health cost sharing ministry that's been sharing members' eligible medical bills for over 40 years. Sure helped us stick to our budget. And here's the website, chministries.org. chministries.org.
Great to have you with us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. We're taking your calls and questions on anything financial. We'd love to hear from you. 800-525-7000 is the number to call. It's 800-525-7000. Let's head to Mississippi. Hi, Brandy. How can I help you?
Good morning.
Hi.
I have a question regarding an inherited Roth IRA.
Okay.
I got it in 5 years ago. 2017, and I was told at that time, which I think might not be right, that I didn't have to take RMDs as long as it was all removed within 5 years if the the person who died had never started taking it. Can you help me on that at all?
Yeah, you know, the change is related to the SECURE Act, and I would always check with the CPA on this just to make sure you get this right. But the SECURE Act was passed in late 2019, and it changed how inherited IRA distributions work. So if you inherited an IRA from someone other than your spouse who died before 2020, you take the required minimum distributions in the case of a traditional IRA, but you can stretch them over your lifetime. And so I think that, you know, what we saw after that for somebody that dies after 2020 is a 10-year rule where they have to take it out, you know, within 10 years. So what I would do is just connect with your CPA or accountant make sure that you understand kind of what schedule you need to pull this out on based on the fact that, you know, this family member who you inherited it from died prior to 2020, because that is kind of the key point at which the schedule on how quickly you need to take this out has changed. Does that make sense?
It does. And I understand all that, and I've done that with the IRA, but they said it was different with the Roth IRA. And that's where it's an inherited Roth IRA, and I have not taken any RMDs out of it because I told them I got it all out within 5 years, I wouldn't have to. And that 5 years will end at the end of December, so I don't want to be penalized or whatever. And I'm not getting good information. Even my CPA couldn't answer that.
Well, I'm not a CPA, so I wouldn't want to give you a definitive answer on that. But the confusion comes into where this there has been some changes through the SECURE Act, so you're going to want to take a look at it. Basically, you know, the prior method was what's called the life expectancy method, where you would open up an inherited Roth IRA, you'd transfer the funds in, and then you would take required minimums determined by your age and life expectancy, and then begin to pull that out as a non-spouse. So again, I think that's where, you know, depending on the date of death and whether you've are taking it under the 10-year method or you're taking a lump sum or you're taking it on the life expectancy method, you just need to make sure that, you know, it's being pulled out properly. So you haven't pulled anything out at this point, is that right?
Right, and it wasn't that I opened up a Roth. It was already his Roth that
right.
we inherited, but
right.
he had just opened it, so he hadn't been taking anything out because he didn't need to before he died. It was 5 years ago.
Okay.
He died 5 years ago, and we inherited it 5 years ago.
Yes. Did he have, so he didn't have the funds in there for 5 years prior to his death. Is that right?
Right. And so what I have found on the IRS website and on Fidelity, which is who I use, it says you're not required to have a taken RMD if the original person, which would be the father, had not been required to take anything yet. And he had just opened it that year. He transferred and paid off out some of the taxes, and he knew he was going and was going to help out by pay the taxes then, and we inherited his Roth.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The challenge is that what's going to further complicate this is you've got the schedule upon which you're withdrawing it, but then you have the fact that in order for the earnings to be tax-free, the account must have been open for at least 5 years when the original account holder died, and that was not the case. And so, you know, you would not get the tax-free treatment on that. So it does get pretty complicated here, Brandy. And what I would do is, you know, if your current CPA is not giving you solid counsel and there appears to be some confusion, perhaps what you need to look at is going somewhere else. And seeing if you can get somebody else to weigh in on this, because we want to make sure that both the taxes are handled properly on the amount that's being taken out, since this had not been in place for 5 years at a minimum from the time he opened it until the date of death, and the fact that the date of death occurred prior to 2020. All of those things factor into both the tax treatment of the withdrawals as well as the schedule upon which you have to pull that out. And you want to get it right, because the last thing you'd want to do would be sometime down the road to have the IRS come back and say, nope, you haven't done this properly, and now there's penalties and interest. So I would, again, go to a professional who can help you with this and make sure as you're interviewing CPAs, you specifically mention that you've got this inherited Roth IRA and you want to someone who can help you navigate the IRS rules and regs on that so that you do it properly. I appreciate you checking in with us. Let us know how it turns out, and we appreciate you calling today. God bless you. To Texas. Hi, Deborah. How can I help you?
Hi there. Thank you so much. My question is about gifting my children with my portion of inherited money from the sale of my dad's house from his estate. Could possibly get this money by the end of this year.
Okay. Yeah, there is no gift tax. And so, you know, until you get above $12 million, so you would be able to give them quite a bit of money in order to satisfy whatever giving desires you have. So let's do this. I've got to hit a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about kind of the amounts you would like to give, and then how you need to handle that, including any reporting to the IRS, because a portion of that may have to come off your annual lifetime gift exclusion. So stay with us. We'll tackle your question on the other side of the break, and we'll be right back.
You probably have a strategy for your finances, your career, even your retirement. But do you have a strategy for your giving? At the National Christian Foundation, we can help you create a giving strategy to inspire your family, maximize your resources, and leave a lasting legacy of faith. To learn how, visit moneywise.org/NCF.
I love this country. But can I tell you something? I love the Lord more than I love this country, and I love the body of Christ more than I love this country. So it is because I love you, frankly, I have to tell the truth. There are many that are more concerned with the consequences in our nation than we are about the cause.
The Hamilton Quarter. Weekday afternoons at 5 Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the MoneyWise program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God, with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
Siri, I need some help.
What's up?
Well, sometimes I feel like I can't get a handle on my money. I mean, where does it all go?
It sounds like you need the MoneyWise app. It's a free app that will help you plan your budget and track your spending.
Oh.
Like the $3 you spend every morning on coffee.
Well, not every morning.
You'll also get access to free biblical financial advice.
Sounds awesome. Let's do it.
Okay, searching for MoneyWise on the App Store. Learn more at app.moneywise.org.
What does the American Family Association stand for?
AFA upholds the truth that all human beings, including the unborn, are created in the image of God and are worthy of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
These values and more are part of our mission to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. We also support the church. We want to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. Thank you for standing with us.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing and the MoneyWise program. If you have money in a retirement account or just a general investing account, you know the stock market can sometimes seem like a roller coaster. But it is possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind in investing, no matter what's happening in the market. You can see a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. Since 1990, Sound Mind Investing has sought to offer financial wisdom for living well. SoundMindInvesting.org.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
Thanks for joining us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West, taking your calls and questions on anything financial today. We'd love to hear from you. 800-525-7000. Just before the break, we were talking to Deborah in Texas. Deborah called with a question about an inheritance. Her dad passed away, leaving the house to her, and they're selling it. She wants to know, with any of the proceeds, how can she gift that to her children? What I was saying, Deborah, before the break is, if you want to give them the money now after you sell the house, you can give up to $17,000 per person in 2023. And if you're married, you and your husband could each gift 17, so a total of 34,000 in 2023 without having to file the IRS gift form 709. But anything over 17,000, that's okay. That's just going to go against your lifetime gift exemption. And in 2023, that number is up to $12.9 million. And so you'd have to give away nearly $13 million in order for there to ever be any tax paid. So it's not a matter of incurring any tax. It would just be that you'd have to inform the IRS that you went above $17,000. So there's not going to be any tax due for you or them. It's really just a matter of how much you want to give and when, and whether or not you need to let the IRS know you did it. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes. And it's going to be, I'm just dividing it up between four of my brothers and sisters, including myself, $10,000 to $15,000.
Now, was it left to you, and then you're choosing to give it to them, or was it left to the brothers and sisters equally?
It was left to the heir, my dad's heirs, which is my brothers and sisters.
Okay.
And it would be divided equally.
Okay, so you're not making a gift to them. You all are just inheriting it. Based on the will, I assume, and there's no taxes on that either, and that's not a gift. That's just an inheritance. So you're receiving an inheritance. You're receiving a share based on how the will dictates that this asset, the home, plus any other assets are to be passed. You all are going to receive that inheritance as a part of the probate process. That's not a gift, and there is no tax due on an inheritance.
Okay. Well, is there any way just for me to sign over my portion straight to my children at the time I receive it?
Well, no, you wouldn't do that. You'd just go ahead and receive your portion as a part of the probate process, and then you have your inheritance, and then that's money you can do with whatever you want, whether that's, you know, you're taking the inheritance and giving it to your kids, you're taking money that you had in checking and giving to your kids. At that point, it's just your asset, and then you can turn mm-hmm. around and make gifts to your children at any time for any reason, and that's where the $17,000 a year annual gift exclusion comes in. So it doesn't need mm-hmm. to be tied to this inheritance. You receive the inheritance, which is not taxable, and then that just becomes a part of, you know, your assets, and then you can turn around and give whatever you want to your kids.
Okay. Real good. Well, thank you so much.
All right, Deborah. Thank you for calling today. God bless you. To Oregon. Hey, Betty. Thanks for your patience. Go right ahead.
Good morning. Thank you very much for taking my question. Is this, I had opened the bond back in May when the interest was really good, and it occurred to me, do I get taxed on the interest that I've accrued already, or does that wait until I finally cash in the bond? You know, like on a CD, they send you statements, and the IRS does take taxes. I have to report that at the end of the year, but is that the same with an I bond?
No. So the typical way that folks will do it is that they don't pay taxes until they redeem the bond. So in that tax year that you redeem the bond, you would add the amount of interest to the same line you report other interest income on your tax return. And then you would pay it at that time. So that's credited at that time. Now, there is a way, if you wanted to, that you could try to make, pay that interest along the way. But the interest is actually not credited until you redeem it. And so most folks just recognize that interest in the year of the redemption all at once. So you will not get, 1099 INT documents from the U.S. government along the way until you redeem something.
Okay. I just want a clarification on that. Thank you. Because I was trying to figure what my taxes might be this year, and I don't want to realize that because I haven't realized the monies yet.
Yes, so, exactly. Okay. Right. And that's why you would want to wait until you redeem it. You've got to leave that in there for at least a year, but at any point after that, you can pull it out. You would just pay a 3-month penalty on the interest if you took it out.
Yeah, it's in there indefinitely, but I was just calculating what the interest might be. All right, thank you so much, and I thank you so much. God bless you for your program. It is such a help to me. Thank you.
I'm so glad, Betty. Thank you for calling. God bless you, and Merry Christmas to you as well. 800-525-7000. We've got several lines open. We'd love to hear from you today. Let's head to Texas. Hey, Art, thanks for calling, sir. Go ahead.
Say, I'll just come right to the point. My wife and I have been on regular Medicare plus supplements for several years, been a long time. And it's getting kind of expensive. And I've heard several people in our Sunday school class talking about Medicare Advantage plans that they have. And they are just ranting and raving about them as to how good they are. Especially with regard to the premiums. So the reason for the call is just, I don't want to talk about any specific company, but just want to get your opinion, Advantage versus regular Medicare.
Yeah, exactly right. They are good in some cases. And so here's kind of the way you would generally want to break that down, Art. If you're in good health and don't make many doctor's appointments, the Medicare Advantage plans are great. And so you may be able to get in on a plan that doesn't cost more than regular Medicare, and they can be really effective. On the other hand, if you have pre-existing conditions that require a lot of doctor visits and other medical expenses, that's where a Medigap policy, which is more expensive but can be better in that case, just in terms of the total out-of-pocket. So it really comes down to whether or not you are relatively healthy. That's where the Medicare Advantage comes in. Otherwise, the Medigap would be better. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. But the people that I'm talking to, they've got all kinds of medical problems. And that's one of the reasons they're just so high on it, is they can just go to whatever doctor and get medical and get dental and just lots of coverage that they didn't expect. And so I'm thinking, doggone, maybe we're missing out here.
Well, so, no, I'm not sure you totally understand the situation, because the Medicare Advantage requires you to be in network, which is one of the downsides. So, and that's one of the reasons why, if you have a lot of, you know, medical issues and so forth, the Medicare Advantage is often not the best, specifically because you're limited in your options, whereas the Medigap's going to give you a lot more flexibility. It's just more expensive. So you may want to clarify on which they have. But at the end of the day, Art, if you're relatively healthy, not making a lot of visits, I think the Medicare Advantage would be a great option for you. If that's not the case, you're going to be better off financially speaking and from a flexibility standpoint on the Medigap option. Thanks for calling today. This is MoneyWise. We're going to take a quick break, back with much more. Stay with us.
This is Frank Gaffney, host of Securing America, a program dedicated to protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and His kingdom. Each weeknight at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, we provide insights and recommendations about the most important challenges facing our nation from her most thoughtful experts and patriots. Join me to learn how you can help in securing America right here at 11 p.m. Eastern Time.
It was a bad move. Target invited men who say they feel like women into restrooms and changing areas designated for women. They probably guessed other retailers would follow their lead, but they were wrong. Others saw that bandwagon was headed in the wrong direction. We're not ready to sacrifice the safety of women and children for the sake of progressive bathroom policies. Invite Target to make a better move. Sign the Boycott Target Pledge at AFA.net.
45,000. That's how many times MoneyWise referred a listener to a Certified Kingdom Advisor, or CKA, last year. And for good reason. These are trusted financial, legal, and accounting professionals who have completed a rigorous certification program to ensure they provide biblically wise financial advice. You can find a local CKA professional in your area by going to moneywise.org and clicking the Find a CKA button on the homepage.
My name is Kent, and I'm a member of Christian Healthcare Ministries. I have a friend who actually has great insurance, and she recently had a life-threatening experience, and she was laying in the hospital bed afraid, not afraid for her life, but afraid of what her insurance would or would not cover. And as a CHM member, I can honestly say I just never have that fear. I can't tell you the peace of mind that provides.
Learn more about Christian Healthcare Ministries' biblical cost sharing at chministries.org.
Great to have you with us today on MoneyWise on American Family Radio. We've already covered a lot of ground, and in just a moment we'll be joined by our good friend Bob Dahl, Chief Investment Officer at Crossmark Global Investments. Before we do, let me make a quick special announcement. We'd like to let you know about a $50,000 matching gift opportunity this week only here at MoneyWise Media. To help us meet our year-end fundraising goal of $250,000, a generous donor stepped up last week to offer to match any donations given to the ministry this week up to $50,000. Every dollar doubled, which means double the impact. We've already heard from a number of you, including many of our AFR listeners, Aaron in Hagerstown, Peggy in Brentwood, Debbie in Aiken, Kelly in Bainbridge, and so many more. Thank you for your generous gifts to the ministry. And I would just ask you, if you've benefited from MoneyWise and want to help expand the message of financial faithfulness next year, we'd invite you to consider sending a gift. And in particular, a gift this week to help us take full advantage of this matching opportunity. Your gift is tax deductible, and it's a direct way to help build and strengthen the kingdom of God. So just head to moneywise.org and click give, and any gifts that come through this week will be applied to directly to this $50,000 match. Again, this week only, every dollar doubled when you support the work of our ministry here at MoneyWise Media, which is how we bring you this program every every day. Again, head to our website, moneywise.org, and click Give at the top of the page. And thanks in advance. All right, before we head back to the phones today, Bob Dahl joins us. Bob is Chief Investment Officer at Crossmark Global Investments. And Bob, another year of data, I guess, that we're expecting out. Market signaling perhaps something positive by green across the board. What are you looking at and watching this week?
So we have the Fed meeting this week, as you know, and the expectation is that they will, for the first time in months, raise rates by only, I can't believe I'm using only and 50 basis points in the same sentence, but there we are.
Yeah.
As we said before, they have opportunity to slow the pace of increase, but not yet to pivot and go the other direction. So that's numero uno this week. Right behind that, the November CPI. Will we get another decent reading showing that inflation is beginning to moderate? And our guess is the answer to that question is yes. But as we said before also, Rob, we think inflation will continue to decline, but to still unacceptable levels in the next bunch of months.
Yeah, we'll certainly be watching that. I know you had a remark in your commentary this week, Bob, about protests around the world that are pressuring policymakers to change their policy directions. Give us some insight there.
Yeah, the main event there, of course, is China. As you know, there was a pretty serious lockdown because of COVID, and then the protests by a bunch of people saying, we're not going to put up with this. You can't force us to stay under lock and key behind a closed door. And the Chinese authorities have acquiesce to some degree and are slowly opening things up. Why is that important? Well, China's a huge economy, and if it's locked down, people can't spend money, and that creates downward pressure on growth around the world just at a time when we need some positive growth. And so the removal of those restrictions could be a modest positive for global growth.
Yeah, interesting. All right, Bob, you know, the labor market has really held up quite well despite all the softening across the board we've seen as a result of inflation and a significant rise in interest rates this year. What's the latest data showing on that particular aspect of the economy?
The same. Resilience. This is the issue the Fed is watching, I believe, most closely. That is to say, unless and until they can slow the pace of wage rate growth, it's going to be hard for them to get a handle on reducing inflation overall, Rob. And on that score, you've got lots of job openings, more than the number of people looking for a job. So prospects of that slowing are rather difficult. It's an important issue.
Yeah, very good. Bob, I know you've been hard at work on your predictions for next year. I won't ask you to reveal any of them, but just give us, as we wrap up here today, your general sense of what you're thinking about as you look out to 2023.
Yeah, it's actually this week. So if you ask me to reveal something, there's nothing I could reveal yet. I'm just starting. By Friday, I hope I have some indication, Rob, what we're going to say. Look, our view is that there's more likely a recession than not in 2023. But if it happens, it's likely to be mild. So we have more earnings reductions in front of us. That's not great news for stocks. Doesn't mean they go down a lot, but it sure prevents a lot of upside. So this sidewise trading volatility that we've seen really since the middle of the year is likely to persist. The rally in bonds has allowed equities to have a couple of rallies in the second half of this year. Might we get some more of that? Yeah, but maybe before bond yields may have to go up before they can go back down. So the same thing in the bond market. So I think there are so many unanswered questions. We're just going to have a lot of sidewise volatility in both markets.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I guess one final question then, Bob. We're getting a lot of folks asking about the housing market. Is this a time to go ahead and buy? Do you see further deterioration of the housing market next year because of a pending recession and just how quickly mortgage rates have risen?
Yeah, apropos question, my view is if in fact we have an economic slowdown and possibly a recession, really hard for house prices to turn around and go back up. Housing is probably the most interest rate sensitive part of our economy, and with rates up so much, the impact on housing is likely to continue. So if you have the luxury of buying a house today or a year from now, I'd wait for a year from now.
Interesting. All right, Bob. Always appreciate you stopping by, my friend. God bless you. And we'll talk to you next week. Good luck as you put those top 10 predictions together.
Have a great week. Talk soon.
All right. Bye. Thanks, my friend. Bob Dahl, Chief Investment Officer at Crossmark Global Investments. You can learn more and sign up for his Dahl's Deliberations, his weekly investment commentary at crossmarkglobal.com. All right. Here in our final moments of the broadcast today, back to the phones we go to North Carolina. Ray, you've been very patient, sir. Go right ahead. Hi, Ray. You there?
Yes. Hello. Hey. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, I have a TSP, and I'm about to turn 59 and a half here. Well, I'll be 59 and a half in March. And I have a loan on that TSP that I probably will not pay off before I retire. So I guess my question is, would it be beneficial to get a loan and pay that off and then draw out the money after I turn 59 and a half and pay that loan off? I mean, pay the loan I got. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, so you would borrow money to pay off the TSP, is that right?
Right, so I wouldn't get penalized for not paying the loan off.
Well, as long as you're going to retire after 59 and a half, you won't be penalized. That will just be considered a distribution when you retire. But you will owe income taxes, both federal and state, on the outstanding balance and interest. So you'll just have to treat that as if you took a distribution. I would prefer to see you do that rather than borrow to pay that particular loan back, since you're paying interest to yourself in this case. So although you would be creating a taxable event, I don't think borrowing from another source to pay it back is the right move. I'd just try to limit your lifestyle, pay as much as you can back prior to your retirement, and then whatever you haven't paid back will be considered a distribution at that point.
Oh, okay. I was thinking I'd be penalized. Okay, I got you. I understand what you're saying.
Yep. Okay, very good, Ray. Listen, all the best to you in this exciting new season of life. Thanks for calling today. To Texas we go. Hi, Lucy. How can I help you?
Yes. Can you recommend an attorney, a Christian attorney, to do a will and a trust? I've been through your webpage, and I really don't find anything in there.
Yeah.
Or how can I go about finding a Christian attorney that can help me with that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it really is important, Lucy, to have a godly, in particular, estate planning attorney as you're thinking through this last stewardship decision you'll make around wealth transfer and how to do that appropriately. Not only the mechanics of it, the documents, but just the questions that can help you unpack the decisions you want to make on how much you want to give away and how much to heirs and how do you divide it and so forth. The best way to go is to contact a certified kingdom advisor there in Texas and ask for a referral to a godly estate planning attorney. All certified kingdom advisors will have an attorney that they work with, and they'll be somebody that shares your values. So just head to our website, moneywise.org, click find a CKA. That's moneywise.org, click find a CKA. And then I would call them and just say, listen, I listen to MoneyWise on American Family Radio, and I need a referral to a godly estate attorney, and they will give you probably a couple of options.
Very good. CKA.
Find a CKA. That stands for Certified Kingdom Advisor. You are very welcome, and all the best to you and the state of Texas as you've now relocated. We appreciate you calling in today. Well, folks, we've covered a lot of ground today. A quick email. This one from Daniel. He says, I'm recently retired. I'm fearful of the market's volatility. Where can I find a safe investment? Well, all investments carry risk, even bonds, which can lose value as interest rates rise. We might be nearing the end of that here in the next 6 months, so that could be a good option. But the key to a successful investment, Daniel, is the time horizon of at least 5 years, preferably 10, where you've got a well-balanced, diversified portfolio. Remember, even when you retire, you still have a decades-long need for money if the Lord tarries and you're in good health. So I would just stretch your time horizon out, make sure it's properly diversified according to your age and risk tolerance, and then try not to get in there and make changes as we see this volatility, because we will have volatility here for quite a bit, and we're probably in for more of a sideways market heading into next year. Thanks for writing to us. If you have a question, send it along to questions@moneywise.org.
Again, folks, this week only a $50,000 match with any gifts to MoneyWise Media. It's a tax-deductible gift, and as we head toward year-end, it'll make a huge difference. So just head to MoneyWise.org and click Give. Thanks in advance. Want to say thank you to my team today. Pat Montague, Adam Suddeth, and Jim Henry. Couldn't do it without them. Thank you for being here as well. Have a great rest of your day, and come back and join us tomorrow. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.